Boy v. Thurman.
May it please the Court. The issue in this habeas appeal is whether trial counsel's deficient performance so prejudiced the trial of Petitioner Hardil Bowie that he was denied a fair trial. That is, a trial in which there was a reasonable probability that he would not have been convicted and sentenced to 10 years in prison for armed robbery. What happened during this trial? Well, it started badly for Mr. Bowie because a potential juror, a jail employee, blurted out during voir dire that I know him and I've heard stories. At that point, the potential juror was dismissed, but trial counsel failed to take appropriate action at that point. What happened next? The trial began, and what did that trial consist of?
Well, there was a discussion whether it should be an instruction, right?
That's right, Your Honor, but counsel failed to focus on the real problem. He focused on the problem of reference to the petitioner being in jail, not the statement by the potential juror that I've heard stories. And so counsel dropped the ball at that point when he should have asked the court to strike the entire panel and start again. It was very early in the proceeding. It would have been easy to do. What was left at this point? Basically, the state had a witness, Tiffany Peters, who was the only witness in the case to identify the petitioner as a co-participant in the crime she committed. And her credibility, obviously, was therefore going to be paramount in the case. What did defense counsel do? He forgot. He forgot to impeach her with her recent conviction of theft by false pretenses. So there we are, with the state having that witness unimpeached. Now, the state at this point had an excellent piece of evidence, but no real way to get it into the record. What was that evidence? It was a loaded .357 Magnum handgun that the state found during a search of the petitioner's dorm room. And could it restrain itself from using that gun? No, it couldn't. So what did it do? It mentioned the gun to Tiffany. It then brought forward a police detective who waved it in front of the jury and said, don't worry, it's not loaded. Then the state could not restrain itself. In closing argument, the first reference to the gun was posing a rhetorical question to the jury. Why? Why does this college student have a loaded .357 in his dorm room? That's the reason the state wanted that gun in evidence. So let's now focus on that handgun. Why does the state justify the admission of that handgun? The state says, well, we used it to bolster Tiffany's credibility. That handgun had nothing to do with Tiffany's credibility. There are unfounded assumptions the state relies on.
Well, the theory is that she was trying to set him up and frame him, and she said he used a toy gun in the robbery. Could have easily said he used a real gun.
And that's what
the victims of the robbery didn't know.
Your Honor, that's what the state said, but it falls apart. How could she have said he used a real gun when she testified he got the gun later? If she had told the police that, she would have opened herself up to impeachment. The petitioner or somebody else who gave him the gun could have come in and said he didn't have the gun at that point in time. So that's a false assumption. And there's an even worse assumption here. And that is the assumption that Tiffany even knew about the gun before the police did. There is absolutely nothing in the record to establish that Tiffany knew about that gun before the state did. She was asked at trial, does he have other guns? She said, no. And then she corrected herself and said, oh, he had one. He got one after the incident. Where did that come from? It probably came from the state. And the state told her, and if the state did that, and we don't know, but there's no record, nothing in the record to the contrary, the state was playing very fast and loose with the facts in this case. So, with that in the record, what did the appellate court do? The appellate court in Wisconsin said, well, it's admissible. It's not other acts evidence. It's admissible because it's evidence to bolster Tiffany's credibility. But the appellate court couldn't walk away from the fact and ultimately admitted, well, it was used for a purpose other than to bolster her credibility. It didn't confront the Thompson case, didn't state Well, it was used for other acts, and that's wrong under Illinois Supreme Court law, Wisconsin Supreme Court law. It didn't say those things. It just said there was no prejudice here. Let's move on to the impeachment issue. The state says, well, impeaching her with a conviction, the failure to do that didn't cause any harm. But what happened? What would have happened here? The state tells us what would have happened. If she had been impeached with her conviction, the state said, I would have attempted to rehabilitate her. And the state then would have opened the door for defense counsel, competent defense counsel, to trot out the judgment of conviction and show she was convicted of theft by false representation. She could have been charged with a felony, but wasn't. She could have been put in jail for this conviction. She wasn't. And that would have been powerful evidence for the defense, competent defense, to argue that there was circumstantial evidence to support the idea that she was treated lightly on her crime, to which she confessed, in exchange for identifying Mr. Bowie as her co-participant in the crime at issue in this case. So there was plenty that competent counsel could have done to show that she was not a credible witness. And, of course, the failure, I alluded in response to the court's question earlier, that defense counsel was clueless in how to deal with that potential juror's statement that was made earlier. Now, what did defense counsel do about the handgun? I've passed over that. I apologize. He did nothing. He sat on his hands. He was clueless. He never even thought to do anything about that handgun. And it only occurred to him after he'd been examined at the post-trial hearing and asked, why didn't you do anything about that handgun? He finally said, you know, maybe I should have done something about that beforehand. And actually, under very clear Wisconsin Supreme Court law, the state should have done something about that handgun before it tried to introduce it. There's a specific Wisconsin Supreme Court case that says, if you're going to try to use a handgun as other acts evidence, but say it's not other acts evidence, here's what you do. The Sullivan case says, take it to the trial judge, show this piece of evidence to the trial judge, say why it's not other acts evidence, say why it's relevant, and say why it will not prejudice the defendant. None of that was done here. The state didn't do any of that. So what has happened in this case? The state has got gift after gift from incompetent defense counsel, and when it came to the handgun, it couldn't restrain itself. It knew it had a powerful piece of evidence, couldn't really get it in, but was on the horns of a dilemma. Did it have a strong enough case to convict? Apparently, it didn't think so, so it had to use this handgun. And so this case, Your Honors, is a case where there were too many errors creating too much prejudice, and there was too little admissible evidence to convict this petitioner. And the clearest evidence of that is the fact that the state felt that it needed to misuse this handgun and beat the petitioner with it. I'll reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Weinstein.
May it please the Court, my name is Warren Weinstein. I'm an Assistant Attorney General representing Michael Thurmer, the custodian in this case. I guess we come down to whether or not this handgun was actually admissible. I do not read Thompson to create an absolute bar against handguns being introduced in criminal cases unless they were used in the commission of the crime. And I would suggest, I think there are more than a few trial judges in the state of Wisconsin be surprised by such a rule. If the handgun is relevant, it's admissible unless one of the other statutes like 90403 or 90404 bar it. The Court of Appeals in this case held that 90404 did not bar the handgun because it wasn't offered to show Bowie's propensity to commit a crime based on a character trait. That's what 90404 bars, and anything other than that is not affected by the rule.
What exactly was the chronology regarding this gun that was admitted? As I understand it, it's found in his dorm room.
Yes.
But it's not linked to the armed robbery because Tiffany said the armed robbery was committed with a toy gun.
That's right.
That she had supplied him with or that he had independent of her? I don't remember.
The gun first came up on redirect examination of Peter. After
the real gun, the issue of the real gun first
right,
came up.
That's right. The first time it was mentioned at trial.
Okay.
And that during the cross-examination, defense counsel questioned her about the description of the toy gun and also introduced some prior inconsistent statements about the description of that toy handgun that differed from her direct testimony at trial. On redirect, the prosecutor asked her if she knew whether or not Bowie had a real gun, and she said yes. Well, she first said no, and then immediately corrected herself and said yes, but he got it after the fact. And then the rest of the immediate direct examination deals with whether or not she told the inspector or the detective who investigated the crime and who interviewed her about the real handgun, and she said no, she had not.
So this is all coming as a surprise to everyone as the trial is ongoing, at least the extent of her knowledge of the real gun and when he acquired it?
I think that's a fair inference from the record. It's not totally clear.
Well, what about the discovery in the case? Was it clear from the discovery in the case that this...
Well, I'm sure that the return to the search warrant was in the prosecutor's file, and as far as I know, it was disclosed under the state's discovery rule.
Now, when the prosecutor stands up and holds the gun and says, "What is a college boy like this doing with a gun in this room?" That's.
I'm sorry. The prosecutor.
The prosecutor holds the gun up in closing argument and says, "What is a college kid doing with a gun like this?"
I don't think that was the first statement he made. He did make that statement, though.
Is there any way you can justify that statement?
No, I don't. I think that probably was improper. But at that point, he immediately shifted. There was no objection, of course. He immediately shifted to the argument about whether or not if Tiffany was trying to make up this whole charge to get back at Bowie, whether or not she would have told the police that he committed the crime with the real gun. Now, actually, she wouldn't have had to tell the police anything because the police assumed that he used a real gun. She corrected the police when at some point, and she was interviewed several times, and I don't recall exactly which interview it was that she corrected, but she corrected the detective's misimpression that the perpetrator had used, or that Bowie had used, a real gun. So she actually did that. As it also turned out, she also initiated the entire investigation. The investigation began because the police received an anonymous tip that Bowie had been involved. Now, that anonymous tipster was put on at trial, it was a friend of Tiffany Peters. Tiffany Peters had told this woman that she and Bowie had committed this crime, and the woman called in this anonymous tip, which began the whole investigation. So I think it's inaccurate to say that the only evidence that Bowie was the perpetrator here was Tiffany Peters' testimony. She was the only person who actually testified and identified him, but there was a lot of circumstantial evidence that bolstered her testimony. They found a black ski mask that he had used and that the victim had testified the perpetrator had used. They found a black jacket. They found black gloves.
Did the victim say that was the ski mask or that looked like the ski mask?
Tiffany testified either that it looked like it, or actually she testified she had given it to him is what she testified.
The victim.
Oh, the victim had testified. No, the victim.
The victim said he wore a ski mask.
Right. A black ski. The victim just testified.
Did she look at that ski mask and say that's the one or that looks like it? Or?
No, I don't believe she did. But
all it was a black ski mask.
With eye holes cut out. And it was found hidden in under some blankets in Bowie's closet in his dorm room. As far as the testimony about or the impeachment by conviction, the general rule in Wisconsin is that you can only ask two questions. Have you ever been convicted of crime? And if the answer is yes, how many? And I think it's fairly speculative that the prosecutor would have opened the door to any further testimony about the crime by rehabilitating her in some way. I'm not sure exactly what that rehabilitation would have taken because she was convicted, and that's clearly admissible. But it seems to me that one oversight on the part of her attorney certainly wasn't the only thing that he could have used and did use to question her credibility. Pointed out numerous differences between her statement to the police, her preliminary hearing testimony, and her trial testimony. And plus, there was the evidence from the anonymous tipster that bolstered the fact that she had actually initiated the investigation indirectly. As to the jury voir dire, it seems difficult. I have a difficult time seeing how the statements, setting aside that one juror who was struck, how the statements would have caused the jury to consider something other than the evidence in the case. I mean, it was a fairly short little voir dire. As the Court of Appeals pointed out, he was on trial for armed robbery. I think most everybody would assume that he had spent at least a couple of days in the county jail waiting arraignment or bond setting or whatever. And all of the jurors, of course, at the voir dire did say they would decide the case only on the evidence, and they're instructed that way. So it seems to me pretty difficult to say that failure to strike the entire panel, which is a pretty drastic measure, would have been either successful or caused Bowie any prejudice at all. He doesn't allege that the jury did, in fact, decide the case on something other than the evidence in the case. So if there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Yeah, 2 minutes, Sean.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have to actually complete my argument that I omitted a point. And that point is that this circuit has a very clear rule that when there are multiple instances of defective performance by defense counsel, the state appellate court is supposed to look at the cumulative effect of that deficient performance. That wasn't done here. It wasn't done. The Wisconsin appellate court didn't do that. So even if none of these instances pointed out to you don't equal the grant of a writ of habeas corpus, the cumulative effect of all of these errors does, and the appellate court failed to do that analysis. Let me respond now to a couple of opposing counsel's comments. He says the Thompson case is not an absolute bar. It's not. There's still a prejudice analysis. But the fact that the use of a gun, which is not alleged to be part of the crime, to disparage the character of the defendant, that is absolutely error. There's no question about that. I also take issue with opposing counsel's statement that in closing argument, the first reference to the gun was not the rhetorical question. The first reference to the gun was the rhetorical question, not bolstering Tiffany's credibility. And opposing counsel said, of course there was no objection. Well, that's really the problem here, isn't it? There was no objection. He didn't realize what was happening to his client. The state said, well, the general rule on impeachment is two questions. Have you been convicted? How many times? That is the general rule. But in the short appendix, you see what the state said at the post-conviction hearing. The state said, we are going to rehabilitate Tiffany. We would have rehabilitated Tiffany if she had been impeached. And that would have opened the door. As this court has pointed out, when finding that it was incompetent assistance by defense counsel to open the door to something like that. That's Goodman versus Bertrand, where defense counsel asked his client, well, what about that conviction? That opened the door for the prosecution to ask other questions. And as the prosecution would have done that here, defense counsel could have barged through that door and asked all those questions about Tiffany's recent conviction. She was convicted only a few months before she testified against Mr. Bowie. At the end of the day, and that conviction, of course, was for a crime involving dishonesty. And certainly a conviction of a crime involving dishonesty is going to carry quite a bit of weight with a jury evaluating the credibility of a witness. So at the end of the day, we have a situation where defense counsel made multiple errors, and where the prosecution used a handgun, unchecked by competent counsel, to commit reckless, if not intentional, disregard for a very clear Wisconsin Supreme Court rule. For all those reasons, Your Honors, the petitioner requests the grant of his petition for writ of habeas corpus.
Mr. Schoenberg, the court, again, as before, I want to thank you for your taking this case and well representing your client.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.